If the establishment of democracy had been a velvet revolution, then ostracism was a guillotine that cut off heads but spilt no blood. And as in all revolutions, the elimination of an elite of power brokers left the field clear for more agile, more adaptable rivals to take their place. Themistocles, who certainly didn't lack for enemies, possessed one crucial advantage. Unlike most of those condemned to ostracism, he'd always been consistent in his opposition to the King of Kings. The great harbour complex of Piraeus began during his archonship, and now, almost a decade later, the largest and best fortified port in Greece stood as bristling evidence of that. Indeed, as Themistocles had now begun arguing openly, all that was needed to complete the transformation of Athens into a naval power of the top rank was a fleet. A tempting prospect for the poorer classes, perhaps, but hardly for the landowners and farmers who had so recently triumphed at Marathon. Themistocles was pressing for some 200 ships to be built. The manpower required to propel such an immense navy would leave few citizens to fight on land, as was traditional, with shield and spear. Was the hoplite class really expected to vote itself into liquidation? Aristeides, the general who had stood alongside Themistocles at Marathon, had begun to emerge by the mid-480s BC as his bitterest and most effective opponent. The Just, his admirers liked to call him, a moniker which the great man, without the faintest embarrassment, had made his own. Then, in 483 BC, there was a lucky strike in Laurium's silver quarry. A fountain of silver, a storehouse of treasure buried within the earth. So the seam appeared to the dazzled Athenians. What to do with this windfall? No sooner had Themistocles received news of it than he was up on his feet in the assembly demanding a fleet of 200 ships. Aristeides rose in immediate opposition. Neither man was able to force an advantage. By January, when the assembly met to vote on whether an ostracism should be held that year, the result was a foregone conclusion. The logjam had to be broken. Either Themistocles or Aristeades would be going. It may not have been framed as such then, but the ostracism of 482 BC was, in effect, the first referendum in history. Perhaps the most fateful, too, for on its result would hang the future not only of Athens, but of an independent Greece, and of much more besides. As the date appointed for the ostracism neared, the Athenians themselves appear to have woken up to this. Rumours of the great king's massive construction project on the Athos Peninsula were by now hardening into menacing fact. Themistocles triumphed. Athens would have her 200 ships. More, in fact. In the shipyards of Piraeus, warships began gliding down the slipways at the astounding rate of 2 a week. Persian envoys, just as they had done a decade previously, before the Marathon campaign, began crisscrossing Greece, demanding earth and water. Every city was visited, with two exceptions, Athens and Sparta. The message of intimidation to the rest of Greece could hardly have been clearer. Frantic not to be earmarked in a similar manner for destruction, many cities scurried to oblige the imperial emissaries, which was, of course, for the Spartans and the Athenians, the ultimate nightmare. They too hurriedly sent out ambassadors, calling their fellow Greeks to a conference of war to be held at Sparta. Recognizing the danger that no city's fleet would ever tolerate accepting orders from the admiral of another, Themistocles made the masterly suggestion that leadership of the allied fleet be given to a people without a drop of sea blood in their veins. So it was that the Spartans, who had already laid claim to the land command by right, one command the sea as well. Two major challenges faced the allies. One was the need to boost their numbers. Of the 700-odd cities in mainland Greece, barely 30 had sent delegates to Sparta. The solution finally adopted was a carrot-and-stick approach. Ambassadors should be sent to all the cities that had remained aloof from the alliance, and a proclamation should warn any would-be Persian collaborators that they would have a tenth of their income tithed as punishment for their treachery. The second challenge facing the allies was to infiltrate the camp of the King of Kings. For the Greeks, as yet, had little idea as to the true scale of what they were facing. Three spies were duly chosen to travel to Sardis.